It's Mac Break Weekly. I'm Jason Snell sitting in for Leo this week. Got a great show. Andy Iannotko is here, so it'll be good. It'll all be comfortable. Renee Ritchie's here. Just because the host is different, it's old friends who are here. And Susie Oakes, late of Macworld, now a freelancer. She's going to be joining us, too, to talk about WWDC one week later, podcasting, and much, much more. Mac Break Weekly coming up next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 563, recorded June 13th, 2017. Dongle Fever.
MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by Bombfell. Bombfell is an online personal styling service for men. It helps find the right clothes for you. Get $25 off your first purchase at bombfell.com/MacBreak. And by WordPress. WordPress powers 27% of all the websites in the world. Get 15% off your new website at wordpress.com/MacBreak. That's wordpress.com/MacBreak. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Look, home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak.
Welcome back to MacBreak Weekly. I am not Leo Laporte. I am Jason Snell, former editor at Macworld, currently at sixcolors.com. Leo asked me to sit in for this post-WWDC edition. I have three wonderful guests to talk more about Apple stuff with me. The host of last week's MacBreak Weekly is here as a guest. How the tables have turned. Andy Iannotko, hello.
I think I'm more of a co-host than a guest. I mean, this is why I raised the question about maybe he shouldn't actually be in the studio in the chair that belongs to Leo, because it transfers things up through the butt into the spinal cord and makes things happen up here that you're not going to be proud of when you're not in that seat anymore. That's all I'm
saying. You can. I don't see you here. All I see is a little TV screen. I can turn it off at any time. What I'm saying is, fight me, but you got to be here to do it. Renee Ritchie,
Let's get some friends of mine. Let's get to a DDoS going there.
Hi, Renee. Hey,
yeah, Steve Jobs versus Andy, the Mountie. Don't believe him. In your corners.
It's good to see you.
Hi, Jason. It's great to see you again, but this time I'm not in real life, so I'm sad.
Yes. Now, Renee and I were both in San Jose for WWDC, as was our very special guest. Until recently, the executive editor at Macworld, one of my colleagues there. She's now a freelance writer and an excellent writer at that. It is Susie Oakes. Hi, Susie.
Hey, Jason. How are you?
I'm doing great. It was a pleasure to see you last week in San Jose as
well. It was. That was fun.
Everybody I know, except like maybe Andy actually, was there. It was one of those things where it was like an out-of-body experience. Just like,
and
so
Susie helped us out on iMore excellently, so we were super happy.
Yeah, it was.
I just turned in another thing about an hour ago, so.
So happy.
Another big smiles.
It's all good.
Yeah.
It's all good. So this is the week after. This is that time when we get a chance to say, all right, we were in the moment. Sleep. There was a lot going on. Last week's show was really excellent and great. Great set of panelists that Andy talked to. Now we've got a week to think back, and I thought we would go over some of the things that happened last week and get sort of a little more perspective a week later. And number one, I have to say, is the HomePod, Apple's speaker, connected speaker, that is not quite an Amazon Echo competitor because of the price. It's more of a connected speaker Sonos competitor, and that's an interesting decision that we could talk about. Now, I got a chance to hear it last week. Renee, did you get wander by and happen to hear one in an undisclosed location?
Yeah, there was a random Pepsi challenge that all I can say is how it compared. I can't give too much information about it, but I did get a chance to hear it and how it compared to the Echo and the Sonos. I think it was the Play 3,
It was the Play 3, yeah. Which is the one that's priced similarly to the HomePod. The Play 5 is a little more expensive.
Well done with the pricing, Jason Snell. You were on that earlier.
I did call that, because the trick with predicting Apple pricing is, of course, to find what you expect to pay and then add $50. And that's the price. So I called it. So, Renee, what's your take? I heard it too, but I'm curious. What's your take on the sound part of it? We didn't get to talk to it. We didn't get to touch it, but we did get to hear it.
We talked to it. It just didn't talk back.
I was just pointing at it. Don't point at it. This mustn't be played ever.
I was staring. I was giving it side. Well, so I sort of have two sets of feedback on it. One is that I have Sonos everywhere here. I think I have 7 or 8 speakers now, and I've always thought they sound really good. And so I was hoping the Home I'm never going to get this name right. The HomePod was going to be about the same level. But once I started the Pepsi Challenge, when you heard like a whole bunch of different songs, the HomePod sounded clearly much, much better. And I think that comes down to the second part, which is using A8 as a digital signal processor, and it gives you sort of like, if you know the portrait mode on iPhone. The A10 chip on the current iPhone is doing all sorts of work in the background to actually process that all out. It's digital computational photography. And now we're getting computational audio where it's ingesting all this. It's mapping the room continuously. It's looking for acoustic signatures. It's finding out where the sweet spots are. It's pulling out vocals. It's doing all these things, and it's making it sound way better than I imagined. So Sonos suddenly sounded kind of dull and muddy, and the Echo sounded like a tin can. And I don't want to replace a bunch of speakers, but I think I'm going to have to replace a bunch of speakers.
Yeah, one thing I'm unclear about the Sonos that was used in these demos is whether it was actually tuned for the room or not, because Sonos
It went through the entire tuning with the app, and they made it sound as best as engineering could possibly make it.
Whoever they are, we don't know who they were. Yeah. They just set it up. We don't know anything about
the Sonos elves.
One of the things that people may not know about the HomePod is technically it's a mono speaker, even though it's got 7 tweeters and that subwoofer, or that woofer, I guess, not a subwoofer.
Woofer/ cooling system.
Yeah, exactly right. So it's got a lot of speakers, but it's essentially a mono speaker in the sense that I asked them about stereo, and they said basically if you'd like stereo, get 2. And then
if you want quad, get 4.
And they will, in fact, do that. It will spread to a stereo sound, but here's the thing. They are doing all of this processing, as Renee said, so it's almost like this weird kind of mono surround where different parts are coming out of different speakers and they're reflected off of different surfaces in a room. So it's not an unprocessed, flat, what you think of as mono. It does have space in it, but it's also not stereo. It's a very strange thing to think
about.
It's
not Atmos either. Well, it's very weird.
I haven't heard it yet. So one of the things I'm really curious about is, to what degree is it taking the mix that you like of a recording you're really familiar with and saying, don't worry, we fixed it for you. Abbey Road now sounds good. That no, I didn't want the drums to be enhanced there. I didn't want the vocals to be more bassy there. I really wanted it to be the way that the engineers recorded it. So do you get a sense that it sounds different? Not just better, but different?
Yeah, I mean, like the live track was different, right, Jason? Like, at least to my ears, the live music they played sounded different than the produced music that they played.
Yeah, the live sample was actually the stereo sample, and it sounded spectacular, which it should, because that was $700 worth of speakers sitting there. But the produced stuff, yeah, I mean, Andy, I think you make a really good point. The question is, we don't know anything about the interface of this thing. We don't know if it is going to be dynamically processing everything, whether it's going to try to make some judgments, whether as a user you can sort of set what kind of audio processing you want or turn it off and make it a little more flat. I found a lot of them sounded really great, but you could tell, like, it's doing some heavy lifting to move different sounds to different speakers. And if you're a purist, this is like the argument about Beats headphones, right? Like, it's not a flat sound. They are emphasizing certain frequencies. And if some people love it because it's a crowd pleaser, and some people hate it because it's not what they feel is the original artist's intent. And, you know, Apple owns Beats.
And it's different.
So.
It's different than the Atmos, because with Atmos, they're getting an Atmos mix, and that's purpose designed to be in different areas. And it's just using reflectivity to put it in those areas, where this has to interpret everything from scratch. So it has to do a lot of guesswork and assumptions on its own.
So Susie, what was your a week in, what's your read on the HomePod? Do you want one? Are you excited about it, or are you kind of turned off?
Well, it kind of made me want a Sonos, because I'm not an Apple Music listener, and it's just so limited into what you can play with it. Like, Apple Music comes straight from the cloud. If you don't have Apple Music, all you can do is use AirPlay 2 to stream something from an Apple device, because right now AirPlay 2 is only in iOS 11 and macOS Sierra, tvOS 11. So it kind of made me want a Sonos. I was never really into the concept of a smart speaker, because I think a speaker should just play anything you play at it. I mean, like, now we have smart light bulbs and they have to update their firmware and they talk to you. And so sometimes when you make things smart, it leads to a bunch of problems. So I was never on board with the multi-room audio and the benefits of a smart speaker until, you know, Apple explained it to me and said, this is the best thing ever. We didn't invent it. We're going to make it so everyone wants it. Then I started thinking maybe they have a point, and the players that are already in the market might have a product that's better suited to me, because I'm just not really into Apple Music. And this is so made for Apple Music that it seems like a shame to use it with anything else, like buying AirPods to use with an Android.
There are connectivity issues here, too. It's going to have AirPlay 2 support, but as far as I could tell, it sounds like it doesn't have Bluetooth support. It doesn't have an auxiliary in port. And, you know, that's the thing is, for a speaker to give it life, having it not have to rely on online services in order to use it in 5 or 10 years is a big deal. And my proof and concept here, I have an iPod Hi-Fi on my desk that I use every day because it's attached to my Mac via a little cable, that cable that's not on the iPhone
they
anymore.
They didn't even delete the port. It wasn't there to begin with.
That's my kitchen speaker. I've got it hooked up to a Bluetooth transponder, and it's still a very good speaker.
So what we're saying is bring back the iPod Hi-Fi. No, we're not saying that. But I think, Susie, you make a really great point. I find myself wondering, I am an Apple Music user, so this could potentially work for me. But as somebody who has an Amazon Echo and a Sonos system, what I really want is the thing that they've announced but haven't actually released yet, which is Amazon Echo integration for Sonos, because that would work great for me to be able to say to the Echo, play this song from wherever, Apple Music, Spotify, play a baseball game from MLB TV on my really good speakers. And that is not something that you can really do without like buying an Echo Dot and hooking it up to a Sonos Play 5, which I have, and it's not a great thing because you still can't control the music by voice. You have to choose one or the other. So it's, you know, Apple, this is a limited product. What's your take, Renee, on the...
Still.
Go ahead.
So I was going to say, there's two cool things here still. One is that it's super early days for the Apple Home Pod. I'm never going to say that right.
Of course.
The Apple Home Pod. And it, just like other speakers didn't always come with all the music they have now, it's possible, and we're talking about Apple here, so it may not be likely, but it's possible that there'll be other deals and there will be other things available, or there will be a way for SiriKit to just do stuff that it doesn't do now. So it's been announced with Apple Music because Apple controls that and they can very easily demo it and do everything they want to in secret while they're still announcing the product. But who knows?
That there was at one point maybe some intention of explaining a developer story here, since this product was released at a developer conference, won't ship for 6 months, and in the end they didn't do it that way. It must not have been ready if they were thinking about it. But that is a missing piece. I'm reminded of the iPod, to use another pod, which shipped basically for the Mac using FireWire, and it took a couple of iterations before they kind of opened it up to
Sonos
Windows.
Is the same thing. Like Sonos, I still can't AirPlay to Sonos, which drives me nuts. I have to use either an Apple TV or an AirPort, the non-Extreme AirPod Express, in order to AirPlay to it. And the excuse was always, well, AirPlay doesn't support multi-room, and can we get multi-room licensing? We're not going to support it. Well, now we have multi-room licensing. So I'm interested to see how other people in this space iterate now that Apple's entering it.
Yeah. At the same time, never count on Apple growing a product in a way that benefits you. I don't mean that as an insult. I mean that as a rational thought. Don't buy it because, well, geez, it would really add value if it had Bluetooth or if it had external inputs. But I'm sure that there's going to be iteration of the software. Don't count on it. I don't realize that the iPod migrated towards multi-platform, but that's because people who didn't want that to happen had their heads beaten against a rock until they agreed to make that happen. And also realize that at that time, it wasn't like an way to tie people exclusively to a music store, a content service that you want people to buy anyway. So, I mean, here's an Apple Watch. It's been around for 2 or 3 years. Is it compatible with anything other than the iPhone yet? Nope.
So that's a worry. Andy, you're right. Rule one, I think we can, as pundits, we can speculate that perhaps Apple will grow this product because in the end, we don't know. Does Apple want this product to be a really great accessory for Apple Music, or does it want to sell a lot of HomePods to whoever subscribes to whatever?
It may not matter though, because Siri is a great abstractor.
That's true.
The cool thing about AirPlay 2 is that other speaker makers are going to be making AirPlay 2 speakers that'll let you kind of roll your own very iOS compatible multi-room audio system. Some AirPlay speakers that are on the market now have announced that they'll be able to support AirPlay 2 with a firmware update. So you might have an AirPlay 2 speaker in your house already, and then with iOS 11, and you'll be able to like use Siri and say, send this to that, and this audio to this other room. Multiple multiple speakers at once. So you just need the app makers to update their apps, and then you'd need the speaker makers to give you new firmware. But you won't really need Sonos or a lot of HomePods if you want to make a cool multi-room audio system just because of AirPlay 2. So I think that's kind of even the cooler story than the HomePod, because the HomePod is still a very incomplete story and we don't know exactly what it's going to be like, especially since it's not out for 6 more months.
And Andy has given us rule one of any technology purchase, which is never buy technology with the hope that a feature will be added later, because it probably won't. Assume it won't. And so if you're going to buy a HomePod thinking, well, they'll support Spotify eventually, you're making a mistake. Don't do it because of that. Do it because you want to get the product
as announced. Siri could use Spotify this year, and they didn't. You know, like they announced last year that SiriKit would give Siri to third-party apps, but not music apps. That's still exclusive to Apple Music. And then this year, you know, still exclusive to Apple Music.
You can make a task. You can make a task to AirPlay your song, your Spotify, to your HomePod.
Oh boy.
But you can't do it.
Are we looking forward for that for like the big, like the official rollout announcement? And we're pleased to say that we support every music service and every OS through If This Then That. They're simply set up an If This Then That recipe that connects through a server. Like, oh, that's not what I wanted.
Oh, they don't support If Then or That, Andy. Come on.
So let's talk one more thing about the future of the HomePod, which is the fact that I said it right. Oh, good. I don't have to pause and be like, the HomePod. What? 6 months. We got 6 months between now and when it's released. Presumably, we'll learn more about this product. I would actually go so far as to say it doesn't seem like it's done, especially on the software side. That's why they're not going to ship it for 6 months. So my question for all of you is, what else are we going to learn about this product between now and when it ships? We heard very little about the details of Siri. There are a couple of slides in the keynote. Do you expect that there's going to be more to this product than what we've heard that may change your opinion of it between now and December? Or is this all there is?
I can't imagine what they can add to it. Right now, I think it's a really, really nicely positioned Apple product, which is, they know that they can't really compete on the intelligence of their intelligent assistant right now. But two things that they do exceptionally well is, let's figure out a way to get immense sound, anything that is sensory, let's make that the best it can possibly be. So whether it's sound, whether it's a screen, whether it's a photo color management, let's make that as best as can be done. Let's also make an object that looks really great as a static object. And there's going to be no shortage of people who can afford $350 for a speaker that sounds nicer than what they're used to, even if what they're buying are $100 and $200 speakers. And also, they don't want to have a speaker set up in the living room or in the den. They just want a place to have really good music, and this will fit the bill. So I'm not really thinking that they're going to be adding, we're going to see a whole lot of new features. I think that we're going to see live demos of Siri on it.
That's good.
But, and the thing that intrigued me most, almost as much as the actual hardware, was the idea of, we're going to make sure that Siri is really, really, really hip to music right now, that we can say, give me the Beatles music in which the drums are, there's a drum solo. Give me songs in which the person who quit the band in a huff on tour released a kind of a screw you album. Give me tracks from that one. And so I don't know how to call those specific tracks from John Lennon and John Lennon's follow up albums. But I know that Siri knows which. Oh, OK. You mean that you want to hear How Do You Sleep? Got it. We're playing that right up. So that's how you can get people really, really happy with their $350 purchase 10 minutes later when they're playing Stump the Band, is what I mean. When you try to stump it and it comes through, even though you didn't expect it to. I had that experience with Google Assistant just this weekend where I said, you know, if this were a really good assistant, I shouldn't have to do that. I should just be able to say, oh my God, it works that way. So I really think that's going to be the highlight of it for me.
Renee, is it a little weird that we didn't actually get more than a couple of slides about Siri?
No, I mean, we'll talk about this later, but that show was so jam-packed. I'm still upset. Yeah. We got as much as, not really upset, but we got way too much as it was. I mean, I'm happy Craig spoke about as fast as a guy who does those little Micro Machines commercials, but I would have rather we had a little bit more time to digest all this stuff. So that being said, I think it wasn't surprising that they told a short home hub HomePod story as they could. My thing is that when the AirPods were announced, there was a lot of, they're kind of goofy. And there's a lot of that happens in the Apple community. It's like, gold iPhone, it's so goofy. Oh, why can't I buy one? Why are they sold out? Apple sucks. AirPods, this is going to be horrible. Why can't I get one? Apple sucks. So I've learned not to underestimate them and not to assume that it's going to, you know, sometimes be as lame as it first looks. And I think there's a lot of potential there. And the sound is amazing. And we don't know the full HomeKit story and the full Siri Kit story. And I'm sure that'll be a big part of the fall announcements. So I'm sort of excited. I don't expect we'll get way more than what was shown off here, but I do think we'll be told a better story and we'll know what we're getting to in much greater detail.
Susie? Yeah, there were a couple of iCloud announcements that were in the iOS 11 section that I think might end up being important for HomePod. So yeah, I agree. We're gonna hear a lot more about the Siri part of HomePod at the iPhone event that's usually in September. When they were talking about iOS 11, they mentioned that iCloud now was going to sync your iMessages. It was going to sync your Siri queries, and that's really important because Apple's privacy, their whole privacy thing is to do everything on device, and they don't send stuff back up and down from the cloud all the time. When they do, it's very encrypted. So when they talked about syncing this kind of data through iCloud, you know, they talked about it being encrypted both ways, and your Siri things are anonymized, and it's all going to be very safe and secure. But this could make Siri on the HomePod a lot more useful. One of the frustrating things about Siri now is that it works differently on every device you use it on. You can't give it the same queries on your Apple Watch that you would on your iPhone. Sometimes it says, you have to use your iPhone for that. And then I get really mad.
Yeah.
So I think this iCloud syncing of new kinds of data is going to help. You're going to be able to ask your HomePod, you know, what was my last message from Andy? And it can just read it without saying, those messages are kind of trapped on your iPhone. And then, you know, all heck breaks loose. So I think there's going to be a lot more Siri demos and new capabilities shown off at the iPhone event where they can really demo them and give them the stage time that they deserve.
All right. Well, more to come about some reflection a week later from WWDC and a little bit of new Apple news too. But I feel like right now would be a good time for us to take a little bit of a break and hear from Leo, who, before he ran off to South America, recorded this message just for you.
Hey, more Mac Break Weekly in just a bit. But first, I'm excited to welcome Bombfell to our show. I signed up for Bombfell. I think it was like a couple of years ago when I was doing iOS Today with Sarah. And I thought, this is great. I love this idea. Really nice clothing and a personal styling service for men, so that you get clothes that match your style, or in my case, upgrade my style. I was looking to kind of look a little bit nicer, and perhaps you've noticed, you know, I dress a little nicer than I used to. After completing a very simple questionnaire, you're then matched one-on-one with your own personal stylist, who handpicks every piece. Your stylist, before they send you anything, will email her selections to you. Then you'll have 48 hours to make any changes or just say, hey, I don't like anything. You can cancel entirely. You're completely in control. You don't get anything you don't want. Bombfell offers the best quality menswear collections. They scour brands and designers from around the world to send you the pieces that work best for you. Clothing is shipped right to your door. You don't have to go to the store and shop. And I love having a personal shopper, somebody who knows style. I don't have very good style sense, I have to admit. But your stylist, that's his or her job. That's what they do. And they are good. And you could say, I want a classic look. I told her I wanted a preppy look. You can say, I want to look like James Bond. You get to guide them. No store involved. You try on what you like. If you don't like it, it doesn't work. It's not your style. You send it back. You pay only for what you keep. No charge for anything else. And by the way, this is the only styling service that doesn't charge a styling fee, a subscription fee. It's not a subscription. I love my Bombfell clothes. In fact, I'm wearing some of it on vacation right now. And when I get back, I'm going to do it again. We have a special offer for listeners to the show, $25 off your first purchase when you go to bombfell.com/MacBreak. Bombfell. I'm going to have to ask them what that means. Bombfell. It's easy to remember, though, because your clothes are going to look the bomb, fella.
Maybe that's where it comes from. BOMBFELL.com, bombfell.com/MacBreak. $25 off your first purchase. And we thank them so much for their support of MacBreak Weekly. Now let's get back to the show.
Thank you, Leo. Leo is floating with turtles in the Pacific Ocean right now, I think. I checked my Leo cam earlier, and that's what he was doing. Let's talk about hardware. Today, as we record this, is the day that the new iPad Pros are appearing in stores. So no longer can Rene Ritchie lord over us the fact that he has been using one since last week.
Mine is 0.8 of an inch bigger than yours, or 0.08 inches bigger than yours. I can do imperial math. Really, I can.
It's totally not, because I got a 12.9 here. So take that, Renee.
Suck it, Richie. Suck it, Richie. There we go.
So, Renee, tell us, you wrote a review of this for iMore. Why don't we start with you and tell me your impressions after using the 10.5, the larger, smaller iPad Pro for the last few days.
So I started off with the 12.9 because I really wanted to draw on that giant canvas. I wanted to see if it could be not a laptop replacement, because I hate that term, but sort of a laptop alternative. But when the 9.7 inch came out, it was just much more advanced. The screen with the True Tone and the camera system was just so much better that I ended up switching to that. And I used it pretty happily. And now this came out, and this it's such a small difference. It really is like 0.8 inches bigger. But Apple was really savvy when they said that they made it just big enough to fit a full-size keyboard. So it's not like a 17-inch MacBook keyboard. It's more like the MacBook, the new MacBook keyboard, where it's, you know, just about as small as a full-size keyboard can be. But it is full-size, and it really does make a difference. And I likened it in my review to like a favorite pair of shoes, and then you get a new pair, and they're just slightly bigger, and they're super comfortable. And you go back to the old ones, and you realize that they've always been just a little bit too tight. And now it's like, just the screen is a little bit bigger. The typing is just a little bit bigger. And this technology called ProMotion, which is Apple's adaptive screen refresh rate, where it can ramp up to 120 hertz for the pencil and then ramp down to 24 hertz for a movie, and actually do both at the same time, because math, it can show you a proper cinematic movie next to a high-speed drawing, is really, really great. And I agree with Gruber, where it's not Retina display to non-Retina display great, but once you see it and you go back, it's like, this text is so choppy, this animation isn't great, this pencil's not perfectly following my hand. All these defects you never knew about are suddenly right in front of you, and you don't want to go back. And that's always my barometer for new technologies. If I miss them when they're gone, then I think they're really valuable. And I think the ProMotion story and the A10X story and what it'll let us do when iOS 11 hits is really a big deal.
So basically, if you're not planning on buying one, don't try one, because you'll be very sad.
No,
that was my takeaway.
It's like Retina, don't try one.
Susie, you want one?
I do. I just bought the 9.7 little iPad because I have a 5-year-old, and so I like to, you know, limit the losses there, because like it's basically our iPad. We pretend that it's mine, but he thinks it's his. So, you know, if he destroys it and it's something even AppleCare, you know, can't fix, I really like to limit my liability there. So the 429 120 gigabyte iPad seemed like the most family friendly choice, and then I bought that about a week before WWDC. So reading Renee's review of this, it sounds like one of those things that I shouldn't try, so I don't know what I'm missing. The 2017 cheap iPad has been pretty good. I have a laptop, so I use it as a laptop alternative, and I'm getting a lot of stuff done with it. I'm really excited about iOS 11. I think that's going to make me a lot more productive with it. But yeah, I mean, these new iPads, they just look so great. But they're $50 more than any, you know, iPad before, like entry-level, you know, top-of-the-line iPad. So just, you know, maybe next year.
All right, a little conflicted. Andy, you, like me, are a big iPad user. What are you thinking about these new models?
I think the increased frame rate is going to be really great. I'm really looking forward to seeing how it plays out with games. I'm really looking forward to seeing how it plays out with the augmented reality stuff that they really want developers to support at the end of the year. And I think my anticipation is a lot like Renee's. I'm not expecting it to be a blow-my-mind sort of change. I am hoping that it's not a Apple sends me review unit. I have to send it back at the end of 60 days. I'm like, oh, damn it. I'm going to have to buy a new one because I don't like the frame rate of the one I have right now. For me, though, it's really it's like what Susie said. It's the operating system improvements that they've made. They're really doing – it's one of the great things about our job. I love it when you see a product that is really, really good just out the gate, And then they just keep rehearsing and refining it and just figuring out things that they can't figure out until they put this in front of an audience and they see how the audience reacts. And they got the message that, okay, we thought it might be a book reader and a games machine and a light duty machine, but people are, like Jason and Andy, are actually using it as a real like computer. So let's make it easier to switch between apps, and let's add more functionality for organizing your workspaces, and let's make a better keyboard support. So the hardware stuff is great, but I'm really looking forward to seeing how well my first generation, then top of the line iPad Pro plays out just with iOS 11. I'm really excited about this more than most things that Apple's got on the boards for the rest of the year. Certainly more than the HomePod.
Do you normally use the 9.7 or the 12.9 right now?
The 12.9, the 9.7 is kind of cramped to me. It's the difference between having a full workspace where we talked about this on Twitter. I love the fact that when I was covering WWDC from the home office here, I'm in the office. I've got literally, I'm going to count the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 computers around me, Windows and Mac, not even counting the Raspberry Pis, with big keyboards and mouses and screens. And yet the best application for the job of I need to watch a streaming video, I need to take lots of notes as I'm watching it, but I also need to sort of live tweet it, the best environment was my 12.9-inch iPad Pro, an external keyboard, and just using side-by-side apps and picture-in-picture. It's just such a beautiful way to work. So I would find it difficult to get that environment going, even in the expanded even in the expanded size of the new smaller iPad. So I hope that the 12.9 still gets as much love as it deserves, because there really is something to having a nice big screen and not having to feel like you're cramped at all.
Yeah, I agree, and I'm very happy that the 12.9, there was some speculation it might go away, but I think that given what we know now of the 10.5, the fact that it doesn't have the resolution of the iPad mini, which would have given it as many pixels as the 12.9, I'm really glad the 12.9 is still around, because it does serve that need. If you want to fill more space, run two apps in iPad layout side by side, 12.9 can do it.
The size classes are a big deal.
Yeah.
And if anything, the success of the smaller iPad will boost the success of the 12.9, because it will always be the way to entice somebody to saying, well, since you have $789 for the smaller one and you use it so much, why not give us $1,100 for the larger one with the, oh my God, it comes in 512 gigabytes now, and now I don't know how to deal with the rest of my life without having 512 gigs on an iPad.
It's a trap.
And Serenity Caldwell, being Serenity Caldwell, she immediately got two cameras out and started filming side by side of her drawing on both the old and the new one. And you can actually see the difference. Like, the lines are tracking almost pitch perfect. Nothing is zero latency. I think they're down to 20 milliseconds, but it is darn close. And you can do shading and small lines and tiny details way better. It's the same Apple Pencil, but you can do it way better than you could do it on the previous one.
That was such an important move, because the Surface Pencil is 22. Now the Apple Pencil is 20. Used to be about double that, so it's great to see that kind of a horse race. So okay, I want Microsoft and its developers to say, okay, now let's make our pencil even better than Apple's, because this will not stand.
Yes. Yeah. Also, this is, as an iPad fan, this is a sync up of the two models. The previous iPad Pros were released about 6 months apart, and they had different features that you literally, I think I said this on a Mac Break Weekly a year ago, you could roll into an Apple store with all the money in the world and say, give me your finest iPad, and they could not give you an answer, because you had True Tone on the 9.7, you had fast charging and USB 3 data transfers on the 12.9, and with these, they're the same. They've got all the features. It's really about the
screen
size.
Except no rose gold on the big one, Jason. I'm decimate. Expected behavior, rose gold. They think it's too much rose gold. I think you can have none more rose gold.
I'm colorblind, so rose gold looks like gold to me, so it's all good.
There's one other thing that I think I'm going to put it in the irksome category, but you guys can tell me how you feel. And previously, the 12.9-inch had the faster USB-C charging and the faster USB 3 data exchange rates. Now both of them have that. But in order to get it, you still – like the cable that comes with it will not give you the 2x faster charging. You have to go buy a separate cable, which is slightly less pro. But even more irksome is to get the USB 3 speeds, you have to buy the adapter, the USB – sorry, the light Lightning to USB 3 adapter because the cable doesn't support in the box, doesn't support USB-C, USB 3. I'm going to keep mixing these up. USB 3 speeds. And even worse is if you do go get that Lightning to USB-C cable, even that does not support the USB 3 speeds. You have to get the adapter. And I think if we're going to have a proprietary Lightning cable, that cable always has to be the best cable. And if it's not the best cable, I'm going to be sad that I have it. So give me USB 3 over a single cable.
This is like the medical disaster movie where, like, oh my God, the disease has just jumped species. Dongle fever is no longer a Mac only thing. It's now infesting the iPad. All we can do is
build a containment wall. I feel like last year, last year, moving shipping dates could have justified like not being able to plug the brand new iPhone into my brand new MacBook Pro. But it's been a year, and now I can't plug the brand new iPad into my brand new MacBook Pro.
Imagine the torment that's going to happen when the iPhone switches over. Because at some point, the USB-C thing is going to happen with all of Apple's devices.
No, no ports. No, there's already a rumor that the new Pixel phone will have no ports. So the iPhone's got to be not that far behind.
Good Lord.
Oh, no.
How much more portless could it be? And the answer is none more ports.
All portless. Yeah, like an Apple Watch. Everything's going to be completely portless. Andy and I are going to be crying in the corner somewhere.
No ports, all storms.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Andy mentioned something that I mentioned as the number one rule of tech buying, which is never to count on a future feature. I suspect this may be why we saw these iPads now, because Apple wanted to say, look, they're going to ship with iOS 10, but we're going to show you what they're going to ship with in the fall, and you'll be able to get it in public on a public beta later in June, and that's the iOS 11 features, and you put them together, and the story becomes a lot more exciting. So first off, I suspect a lot of buyers of these new iPads are going to go to the public beta, and I wanted to ask all of you, with a week's thought, if you have more things that you're excited about or curious about the iOS 11 announcements from last week.
I think my thing was just shell shock. Initially, it looked like the iPad got all the goodies, but when you start delving into it, I mean, the drag and drop is built in to iOS 11, so it's already surfaced in some places of the iPhone, and there's all things like individual thread. There's so much stuff in this that I think I've only gotten halfway through, and it's been a week, Jason. I can't imagine how much more we're going to discover, not only a past beta 1, but just as we approach September. It is chock full of really cool stuff, and we haven't even gotten into like Core ML and AR Kit and all the stuff that's really forward thinking. There's just so much base level features that have either been fixed or tweaked or added that I think it really is biggest iOS release ever.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting refinements. I mean, there's some brand new things, like the Files app is going to be really cool once it gets, you know, all the third-party services integrated, and you'll be able to have one place to see all your documents, which you can do now, but then, you know, they're third-party apps, so sometimes they're a little limited in what they can do. So that's going to unlock a lot of power. And then there's a lot of just little refinements that are going to make things better, like the iMessages, getting the apps out of that drawer and putting them in a little scrollable thing along the bottom of the screen so you can actually find them and use them is going to make people actually find them and use them. So there's a lot I liked a lot of the improvements to things that were introduced in iOS 10.
Andy, what are you looking forward to?
I'm sure, I don't know if you wanted to talk about watchOS later, but I'm really excited about the refinements they're making to watchOS. That's gotten me it's gotten me to take this watch out of the box it's been in for the past 6 or 7 months and actually start wearing it again. But I'm really like things like the new control panels, where I always thought that it was kind of weird that, like, if I want to switch Wi-Fi networks, if I want to disconnect from a Bluetooth device, I can't just long press on something and then it pops up and I can make the change. I think I'm spending way too much time both on the iPhone and on the iPad having to go into settings and through that navigation in order to get there. When, again, 3D touch, why can't I just press and hold and you show me all the Wi-Fi networks that can tell you, yes, please disconnect from my phone right now because I want you to connect to this free network that I've encountered instead. So hopefully we're going to see more refinement like that. Once again, it really is about taking, we've been watching how people are using this thing. We're not doing things based simply on style or on fashion or on we're bored with old design. They're doing things to say, here's a way to make things even better and more effective. And that is that's always a great direction for anything.
I'm intrigued by your comments about watchOS, and I want to come back to that. But I will say before I do that one of the things that impressed me about the multitasking features in iOS 11 is that it doesn't feel like a couple of features just kind of dropped in. They all work together, right? The Spaces sort of view of the multitasking switcher and the rethought dock and the drag and drop all were very clearly built together for one purpose.
Yeah.
And that's you can tell.
It's such a contrast with the Mac part of the demo, which is, and we had some guy had an old office and we found a couple of ideas in the back of the drawer and we had an intern that we're going to fire in 3 weeks anyway. So I said, well, tell you what, we're going to be paying you anyway. Why don't you add split screen to the mail app and then bill us for whatever hours you got left. The Iowa stuff really seemed like we keep thinking about how we can just enrich this entire thing top to bottom. We're not just adding random features.
Yeah, nor are we trying to push something right across the finish line that we so we can ship it or so we can show it at WWDC. Although a little birdie did tell me secondhand, this is not an Apple birdie, but that maybe this stuff was actually pretty far along last year and it just didn't make it in. And that may actually be a reason why it seems so accomplished and so polished, is that it's not something that's just been worked on the last few months. It is something that's been worked on for the last couple of years, and that's good.
Like, all the drag and drop stuff was spec'd out last year. And actually, I think it was pretty close to this implementation, but it probably took a long time to get it ready for that demo.
Yeah, but it does not feel like, I mean, again, it's a developer beta. I killed my iPad when I installed it on there and I had to restore it. That's why I have an iPad just for that stuff, and it's fine. So don't try this at home yet, kids. But I will say,
five of ours went perfectly. One phone cannot do anything now. So
exactly.
Please do not install it if you don't need it.
It's a huge risk. But with that said, the multitasking stuff feels way more polished and stable than it should be for a first developer release. It is something that they've clearly been sweating the details on, and as an iPad Pro user, that makes me super excited.
I'm really keen to see if they finally turn us to. I can never get the hang of every app, even an Apple app, that tried to do, now keep your holding this and then put another finger here and add this to it. And it could be when we have basically multi-finger, basically collecting things to drag over. I'm wondering if that will become second nature, or if, I'm not talking about the positive or negative of the feature, I'm talking about how I use things. 3D touch is still not second nature to me. It's still, I can just simply long press on something, or I can still do something in a different way. So I'm really curious to see if that gets programmed in my head the way that a right mouse click or a press and hold or a control click has been programmed into my firmware and how to deal with Apple devices.
Yeah,
I'm going to want to use two hands, I think, more than I used to.
Yeah.
So have you ever seen those crazy accessories where it's like a strap and then like sort of a little table, like you're a cigarette girl in the club, but it's for
Jonathan
resting your
device,
iPad,
yeah.
Just kind of at waist level and going at it. Maybe they'll sell like 10 or 12 of those now.
They have those for real estate agents who do like construction people who do like PDF stuff and fill in documents on the go. But it reminds me of CBS was monstrously subsidized by Microsoft for a while. And they had a bunch of shows, including cop shows, where they were using iPads and they switched over to the Surface. And I remember it because when they had the iPads, they were holding it in one hand and doing things on the other. And then when they switched to the Surface, I literally remember them getting out of the car, setting down the keyboard, putting the tablet on top of it. Meanwhile, the suspect is running away down the street, getting it up, and then we're going to get him. And then the guy was already gone. And now I have that feeling, as much as I love this implementation, it is a two-handed implementation. You can drag and drop with one hand while you're doing all these four-finger pinches and swipes and zooms and opening up dialogues and that. But that requires a second hand. So I'm going to be the guy now who's putting my iPad down in the trunk of the car while the suspect is running away. And I only have myself to blame.
Yeah, I like it because the idea that it doesn't have to be used by everybody and it is a pro feature essentially. And it is a broken part of the metaphor, right, Susie? I mean, the idea that you wouldn't be able, like, why can't I use one hand to move this thing while I swipe in the springboard with the other? It's like, of course you should be able to do that. And if people don't learn how to do that, then that's fine. They just won't do it. But as a person who spends a lot of time in iOS, it's like I love the idea of being able to do that when I'm in a two-handed context, or if we all start wearing little sandwich board iPad tables, which could be a trend. It could happen.
Like Mac trackpad gestures have just always been one-handed, so it'll be an adjustment, but I'm here for it.
Yeah, it's a little Tom Cruise-y, little different.
Back to the origins.
Yeah, but so Andy, lay it on me. I use an Apple Watch every day. And I didn't really lean forward in my seat too much with the watchOS announcements, but you apparently did. So tell me, what was so interesting about watchOS 4 for you?
The move from its refinement as, hey, it started off as, it's an iPhone for your wrist. It's like, I don't want an iPhone on my wrist. I want like a handy set of features that are relevant to this. And they, now they've moved a lot of – they've made the application switching a lot simpler. I still feel as though even a number of iterations later, I just want to go back to the app I was just using before I had to swipe away from it to get to that one task I wanted to do before getting back to the clock. Now it really seems simple as swipe one way. Here's the thing that you wanted to get to, swipe back, and now you've got a wristwatch again. I really love the idea of just as simple and obvious as let's make the music app kick butt. Now that we know that people love this as a fitness watch, let's make it a pleasant experience to play music on this thing. So it's not just grudgingly, we will give you, if we must, one playlist, and you're so lucky we're letting you have a playlist. I mean, it's such a stupid idea. You're such children sometimes, but okay, fine, we'll let you have a playlist. And now it's like, no, if you want multiple playlists, great, have multiple playlists. Hey, how about automatic playlists about like recent music? We will let that you do that too. How about you have a couple of favorite albums that are not playlists, but they're albums you like? Great, put that on the watch as well. How about you have a playlist that you like to listen to while you work out, and different playlists for different types of workouts? It's not that I technically do a lot of, you know, like CrossFit training with this thing on my wrist. I am a more deliberate constitutional walk sort of exerciser. But the idea of why is it making it so hard to do something that's such a natural fit, especially it's 93 degrees here in New England right now. I took my walk and I didn't even necessarily want to take my phone with me because my phone is like the big screen one. But because I've got the AirPods, which work so well alone with the watch, and now because I have like my one favorite playlist on here, I haven't upgraded to the beta yet. It's just such a natural thing to do. I think that everything that they do to make this more of a standalone device, where hey, if you have your iPhone in your pocket, it'll be even better. But even just as a standalone device, that's even just competing with the best Fitbit, the best Garmin watch out there, it will kick that thing's butt. Even if you don't necessarily have access to a watch, that's what's going to lead this device. Into the next level of utility. When they say that this has to be good in and of itself, it has to be good to someone who doesn't care about phone apps, it just has to be good. It has to develop its own identity. And to me, what I was seeing in iOS 11 and the new version of watchOS, I'm seeing that kind of new range of thought, to saying, let's pretend that this is, let's raise the pirate flag over the watchOS building and say that we don't care about you people who are doing iPhones. We don't care about you people who are doing iOS. We will do things that make your device irrelevant if we have to, because we are watch people. Fear us, because we have dragons.
It also lays the groundwork for a future bit of watch hardware that is inevitable, whether it comes this year or next year or in some future year, that is more independent and has some cellular connectivity in it. So you can completely leave the iPhone at home without worrying about missing a call. And you've got to have the software to support it. You can't say, well, you can go for a run, but we can't bring any music with you, so sorry about that. It needs to get more self-sufficient.
This is a column on my to-do list, so I'll make this really, really short. I really think that the way to really elevate this watch is to make it as self-contained as possible, so that not only does it make it a better, unique experience, but also so that, guess what? Got an Android phone? We don't care. Use it. You want to sync it to an iPad? We don't care. Use it. Just write one simple companion app that doesn't assume that I want to be able to share apps between these two devices. Just sell this to people who've got $250 for a really cool watch, because this is a really cool watch in and of itself, and B or two want to spend $250 on a truly premium fitness watch that is eminently practical and attractive. I think that that's what it's. I think the Apple Watch is in Earth orbit. It needs to light off that booster that will send it into lunar orbit. And I think that making it into an independent device that says, if you bring it within Wi-Fi contact of a trusted device that will offload your fitness data, that's good. We don't care. That's how you'll get your updates. We're good with that. That's what Apple needs to do with this. I'd be so excited if Apple moved in that direction.
Well, you heard it here first, folks. In a future column, Andy Iannacco predicts that the Apple Watch is going into space.
Damn, I should have held that back.
All right.
My social media game is totally not on point.
So much more to talk about, and we will, because there's more show. But first, another message from the ghostly visage of Leo Laporte. Leo, where are you?
He's not dead. He's not dead.
He's fine.
He's not dead.
He's fine.
As far as we know. He might be dead.
We'll get back to the show in a moment, but first I want to tell you about my web host, not just mine. WordPress hosts 27% of all the websites in the world. I've been a WordPress user, I first set up my WordPress site in the early 2000s. I moved my blog to WordPress, loved it for years. I admit I left for another, you know, I saw a good-looking site over there, and I briefly had a little fling, but I realized, no, I love WordPress. This time, though, I went back to not hosting it for myself, but WordPress.com, and I love it for a couple of reasons. First of all, they do the hosting, which makes it, by the way, more affordable, frankly. They also do the security and the patching automatically. Everything's up to date. They've got great service and support, so I never have, you know... It used to be when I was hosting it myself, I'd have questions and nobody to ask or have to search forums or whatever. Now I go online and their happiness specialist, well, they are fast, will help you get it going beautifully. I was looking for a template that had some features like my screen at leolaporte.com is a full bleed picture, right? And it rotates. And so I said, well, what do you recommend? She said, oh, 2017, you'll love it. And I do. It's a great template. They have hundreds of them, you know. And the thing about WordPress, it's right for any kind of website. Whether it's a blog like me or a business, you don't have to have any experience building a website. They can guide you through the process. And the other thing I like about WordPress.com is there's a community there. There's a front page. There's a follow button. 500,000 people now follow my WordPress blog. I've only been back for a couple of months. That's like blew me away. That means every time I post and I do notice the difference, I get all this traffic. Oh, great analytics. I've never seen better analytics. You know exactly what people like and don't like. The comment moderation is fantastic. You get to set it the way you want it. I can go on and on, but you'll see why more websites run on WordPress than any other platform, including some of the biggest public. Paul Thurrott's site, Thurrott.com, runs on WordPress. Many publications. I love WordPress. Get started today with 15% off any new purchase plan at WordPress.com/MacBreak. Create your website and find the membership plan that's right for you at WordPress.com/MacBreak. You'll get that 15% off too, which really makes it a great deal. Thank you, WordPress, for so much, for making my blog sing and for supporting MacBreak Weekly. Now back to the show.
Thank you, Leo. He's fine. He's on vacation. This is a perfectly normal thing. It's perfectly normal. Why are you asking?
What we're saying is that he's in a much, much better place.
Yes, which is the Galapagos Islands.
He is at peace.
This show was called Mac Break Weekly, and I thought that we should actually just admit that Mac is in the name and talk about the Mac a little bit. So we have macOS High Sierra announced last week and a whole bunch of new Macs, including updates to the MacBook, the MacBook Pro, the iMac, and the announcement 6 months early of the iMac Pro. So I want to start with Renee because Renee has actually laid hands on many of these products, the ones that exist, and has reviewed them.
I can't lift up the iMac.
Look at that. Look at that. You show off, you. So Renee, tell us, these are not the most, I mean, this is a gesture by Apple to say that they're going to try to keep, I read it at least, as they're going to try to keep the Macs and especially the MacBook Pro updated a little more often than maybe it used to. It's been about 9 months since the last MacBook Pro, the introduction of the Touch Bar, and we've got some new chips in here. So that's exciting. Is there something exciting about these products in general, or is it just that they've got the new Intel chips and that's a good thing?
Exciting-er?
Yeah.
Exciting-er? Apple is sort of like, there's a lot to the Mac story that is Apple's own doing, but there's also a lot of it that's Intel. Like last year, when they put out the new MacBook Pro, it came with Skylake and not the current generation Kaby Lake. And that's because Intel simply had not made the quad-core version that Apple wants for the MacBook Pro, nor had they made the one with the Iris Plus, what they're calling now Iris Plus graphics that Apple wanted. So they had to go with last year's model, and it makes them look behind, you know, as much for their own reasons, but also they're waiting on components. They don't control their own chip destiny the way they do on iOS. That Apple A series chip ships when Apple needs it to for a reason. So a few months later now, we have the Kaby Lake versions. Kaby Lake is interesting for Intel in a number of ways, partially because it was really hard to get to 14 nanometer, and instead of going from Broadwell to Skylake and then on to Cannon Lake, we now have this Kaby Lake and I think a Coffee Lake step in between. So Kaby Lake isn't a die shrink, and it's also not a giant architecture leap. It's more like a little architecture hop. And it means there's better base frequencies, better turbo frequencies, which means it'll go faster. You still have thermal limits, so it might ramp down faster, but you should be able to burst, you know, nicely when you need it. And the sort of bigger story is that it now has 10-bit H.265, which I refuse to call HUVCA because it sounds funny, baked into it, which means that if you are doing encoding or decoding of H.265, which is one of the big standards, not the Google one, but the other big standard for 4K HDR video, then this will do it with hardware acceleration, which will spare your Mac from otherwise burning a lot of cycles trying to do video while you're trying to do everything else. And there's some nice things thrown in, like the MacBook gets a speed boost. The iMac now sends 10-bit color to the T-Con. It's still an 8-bit panel, an updated one, but you're getting at least 10 bits to the T-Con right now. So it's all part of this continual evolution towards better, more colorful, deeper displays, and sort of the hardware to support it. So they're not revolutionary Macs. There was no big redesigns, but they did make every Mac that got it, as Susie said, RIP MacBook Air. It did make every Mac that got it better than I thought it would. It was a better bump than I thought Kaby Lake was capable of achieving.
All right. Susie, are you buying a Mac? Did we talk about you maybe buying a Mac at some point here? What are you thinking about these new ones? Does it change your mind?
Yeah, I mean, I am in the Mac market. I had loaners from Apple when I was at Macworld, and now I don't. I'm using a mid-2011 MacBook Air right now, and the fan's on, and everyone's sad. So, yeah, I am in the Mac market. The problem is I don't like the new keyboards. So I was really interested in the Verge said that the new Mac keyboard is a little better, but not enough to convince the doubters. That's me. I'm the doubters. Everyone's like, oh, you'll get used to it. Even Apple kept telling me I'd get used to it, and it's been, I think, 2 years since the little MacBook came out, and the MacBook Pro keyboards from 2016 are supposedly a little better. There's like the second generation of this new butterfly switch keyboard that you hate. I still don't like it. So the MacBook Air has a really nice keyboard, but it just seems like a shame to be spending that kind of money on two-year-old technology, although it would still be a huge bump from what I have now. So I'm not really sure what I want to do. I wrote about for iMore about how iOS 11 might let me, you know, take my sweet time to come up with an answer because I can do so much better work on my iPad now. But yeah, I really do need a new Mac. So I don't know, maybe the MacBook Pro Escape. That's one of the dark horses front running right now.
Which they cut by $100, which is nice. That's the touch barless MacBook Pro 13 inch, which I like calling the MacBook Escape because it has an escape key. You see, it's very clever. I'm with you, Susie. I have a MacBook Air 11 inch and it's an i7 model from a couple of years ago. It's still pretty awesome, and it's got the keyboard that I'm much more used to. And maybe this is why Apple is still selling MacBook Airs, is because so many of us are
all
like
all the ports and a good keyboard.
Well, they can't get MacBook down to $900 either. I mean, I think that's a big deal.
Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah, the MacBook still starts at $1,299, which is the same price as a MacBook Pro entry level now.
Yeah, exactly right. Which is, I mean. I have been saying, and I know you guys have probably been saying for a while now, that the successor to the MacBook Air appears to be split. It's the MacBook if you care about thin and light, but don't care about performance as much. And it's that the touch barless MacBook Escape, essentially, the MacBook Pro, if you care more about the performance than you do about the thinness and the lightness. And now they start at the same price. So it's not $999.
Or is iPad Pro if you're Federico Tichy.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. It's an interesting place the Mac is in. Andy, did you read it the way I did, that this is in some ways Apple sort of walking the walk after they talked the talk in that press, you know, that little press roundtable they did a few weeks ago? Of like, all right, we actually are going to update our Pro computers in less than a one-year cycle.
Nice to see new modern CPUs. I think that it makes the MacBook Nothing. I'll have to make you a deal. I will give you a free unlimited license to use MacBook Nothing if I can similarly use MacBook Escape.
I didn't invent Escape, and so please use it with my compliments as the person who didn't invent it.
Then I'll give you credit and say that you didn't tell me that it was someone else's and that you stole it. Anyway, it was so easy. So I think the MacBook Nothing is a much better machine right now. I'm glad they improved the keyboard. This keyboard makes complete sense with the MacBook Nothing because it is a delightfully designed and built machine. The idea that you have this thing that's marginally thicker than an iPad, but it is a full bore Macintosh. Every choice that Apple made makes total sense for this thing. I'm glad to see it get a better keyboard and a better CPU. As for the improvements to the MacBook Pro, still piece of crap keyboard, so I couldn't care less.
Ouch.
So you think the regular MacBook keyboard is better than the MacBook Pro?
Not anymore. It's the same now.
Yeah. I thought they were pretty similar.
It's got the butterfly generation 2 butterfly switches.
It's still got these. It's still got these zero key travel. It's still a very better version of crap. The thing is, I won't go through this. I won't go through this the fourth or fifth time, because I'm sure I've gone through this so many times on the show. On the MacBook, nothing. Having a nearly zero key travel keyboard makes sense. There's a real point to it. They're trying to make this thing as ridiculously thin as possible because it's for people who want something as portable as they can possibly make it, and they should be willing to make some trade-offs for it. For a MacBook Pro, the fact that I can give Apple $4,000 and still have a keyboard that's marginally more comfortable to type on than what was on the membrane keyboard of an Atari 400 in 1980, that's not okay. It's garbage, and it's not okay.
That being said, I heard the best analogy ever at WWDC. So there was a developer who had one of the new MacBook Pros, and there was a problem with the keyboard, and he had to take it in. And he didn't like the keyboard. He didn't like it at all. He preferred his old keyboard, or so he said. And he took it to the Apple store, and he was using his old MacBook Pro. And he just looked at me, and he said, "This feels like typing through mashed potatoes." And that was just the best description I'd ever heard of the difference, at least the difference I feel between the old keyboards, which have those loosey-goosey scissor switches, and the new switches. And I think the Butterfly 2, especially on the smaller MacBook, because it is so small, do make a slight difference. And I was talking about this with Dieter Bohn, and we're trying to figure out exactly what it is. It's still, that's an opinion. I think it's better. And
it's obviously an opinion, but nobody has a choice. It's such a divisive choice. It's not like the difference between the 2014 and the 2015.
I agree with MacBook all of that. I think you should have a choice, but it's not garbage. For people who like it, it is a phenomenal keyboard.
As a choice, it's a terrible, terrible design choice.
It's not having a choice.
I am Team Andy. I don't like that keyboard at all. Also, nerds arguing about keyboards. Yes, you're watching listening to a podcast about technology on the internet. It's a thing that we do. But to Andy's point, Apple. I have an iMac. I have a crazy mechanical keyboard attached to it, right? But the laptops have to be for everybody because you can't swap in another keyboard for your MacBook Pro. It is the one that comes with it is the one that you're going to be using when it's on your lap. Let's be realistic about it. And that is so I get what Andy's saying there. The keyboard is the same between those two models. I get Andy's point that you need it on the ultra thin model. You could have put in something like the Magic Keyboard on the other model, and they chose not to. And I will admit that that's one of the reasons I am sticking with that MacBook Air keyboard is because it doesn't feel like mashed potatoes to me. It feels pretty good.
And they didn't switch on the new iMac keyboard. The new iMac keyboard with the numeric thing is still the same as the Magic Keyboard, so they haven't gone to MacBook keys on the desktops yet.
I'm a little surprised because it would seem like in the past when Apple's come up with a new keyboard style, it has stuck it everywhere. And that hasn't happened this time. So.
Well, and no touch bars. No touch bars on the new iMac keyboard. No touch bars on the new MacBook. I miss Touch ID more. I really have gotten used to Touch ID. And neither of those
have Touch ID.
Before.
That would be great.
That would be good.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I want Touch ID more than I want a touch bar at this point.
Same.
But definitely so. I wonder, we have
it's
these arguments
point
out here.
For
I'm sure.
Using the iPad as a laptop alternative, you can use any keyboard you like.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's a point for the iPad.
That's true. I got a Magic Keyboard right here, in fact.
Yep.
Look at that.
Mm-hmm.
What about the Logitech, Jason?
Yeah, I use that one.
There are many keyboards available to attach to your iPad, as Susie said, and they're great. I can even attach.
So the iPads are now more flexible keyboard computers than the Mac.
They are. The iPad is a better keyboard experience.
That is the
Mac
advantage of not having a hardware keyboard permanently attached to your device, right?
Yeah. The only thing I just have to say is that don't if you like a flat keyboard, great. If you try it and you don't have an issue with it, great. I'm not opposed to someone being happy with what they're happy with. All I'm saying is that do not for one half of a second accept anybody telling you you will get used to it. You won't. And for $2,000. No, I'm serious. I don't know anybody who was like issued a MacBook Pro. They really have to use it 6 months later. Do you like the keyboard? No, I'm used to it, but I would still rather type on anything else. So I'm saying you've got two. Apple has this awesome return policy. 2 weeks. You don't even have to. You can just say that I saw an episode of CSI Miami that I didn't like, and for that reason, I'm returning this MacBook. They will give you your money back. That's a good enough reason. So do not keep this MacBook for 2 weeks and 1 hour, thinking that eventually you will like it because you will not get over that keyboard if you don't.
And write to Apple and tell it. Like write to Apple's exec team, tell them what you feel because Apple has backtracked in the past.
Yeah, I suspect there are some inner divisions at Apple, given the fact that the Magic Keyboard is still available. That there are probably some. Debates
and they
even
have
more
to use
feisty
it, right?
than
they're issued these computers.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, and they use them every day too, and they are frustrated by it. There's probably somebody inside Apple who's got a MacBook Pro with the old style keyboard or the Magic Keyboard on it as a prototype.
And boy, would they love ammunition if you can give it to them.
Yeah, they just and that they're going to use that prototype forever because they never made it, right? That's one of those things that's out there. Let's talk about the iMac Pro for a minute. Not like we've learned anything new, I think, in the last week since they announced it, because it's another one of these 6 month out products. But I'm curious. So,
Jason, does that mean that they have to ship 5 before New Year to qualify as a 6 month out product, like with the Mac Pro? What they have to do, Renee,
is they have to have them in a movie theater in Los Angeles or New York for about a week, and then they're eligible for an Oscar.
Okay.
I think that's how it works.
Good to know.
So the iMac Pro, by all accounts, was designed at a point where the Mac Pro was going to be killed. That seems to be the story. And then they changed their mind, and they held that meeting, and they told everybody who was assembled at that meeting of journalists that they were going to make a Mac Pro after all, but they also had this amazing iMac coming, and that was, as it turns out, foreshadowing for the iMac Pro. So since we don't know a lot more about the iMac Pro, it's coming out in 6 months, it's going to start at $5,000, you're going to be able to spec it up to probably into the $15,000, $17,000 range if you want to. If you want to max it out, it is a... you can spend a lot of money on this thing, but I'm curious about the kind of the elephant in the room, the shadow that is conspicuous by its presence, but we can't see anything about it. Which is, what's the Mac Pro? If this is the iMac Pro, what is that Mac Pro next year?
Tower?
What can it do to be different than the iMac Pro is? How does it differentiate itself?
A thermal core and 2 graphics cards, Jason. You'll love it. It looked like a cylinder. No, that was the last.
Mm.
Sorry, I got nothing.
I thought I would
even
love it.
Even more Thunderbolt 3 controllers.
Yeah,
a tower.
Really, it's like, how do you differentiate? Let's assume that the iMac Pro will not be, or the Mac Pro will not be literally the guts of the iMac Pro stuffed in a box without a monitor, and will actually be different in some way and give pros who are not satisfied with the iMac Pro something to be excited about.
Doesn't it have to be the modularity? I mean, because like this iMac Pro is going to be phenomenal. It's going to have Xeon cores. It's going to have ECC RAM. It's going to have everything that you want in a heavy duty machine. But iMacs are not the most serviceable, not the most upgradable machines in the world. And if 2 years from now, even a year from now, you want to take out that AMD Radeon card and put in a new one on an iMac, that's really hard. Like, unless you live next door to iFixit, it's really, really hard. You have your own set of suction cups. Really hard. And if Apple does do what they sort of hinted at doing and making a modular Mac Pro, then it could have everything. It could be identical to this in every way, same Xeon CPUs, same AMD graphics, same EC RAM, but give you the ability to open it up like you did the original cheese grater Mac and just swap out those components. And I think while a lot of people will love that 5K display, there'll also be a lot of people who just want to have a computer that they can upgrade as time goes forward, and they'll gravitate more towards the tower.
Expandability does make a lot of sense. Susie, what do you think the Mac Pro should be if this is the iMac Pro?
Yeah, I agree with Renee. I mean, people still hold on to and love the Mac Pro towers and even the G5 towers. I have a friend who still uses one every day. So, and it's because they were so easy to open up and do things with. And that's what pros want, at least a segment of pros who aren't going to be best served by the iMac Pro. So I completely copy Renee's answer.
Andy, any other thoughts about what the Mac Pro might be?
Jason, I want to first tell you what an honor and a blessing it is that you have chosen me to be on this panel today. Your hair is wonderful. Sorry. I think the key to the Mac Pro line, also the MacBook Pro line, but especially the Mac Pro line, is if your name is Guillermo, then let Guillermo be Guillermo. If I should have picked an easier pronounced name,
yep.
That's how Joe. Let Joe be Joe. If Joe wants to be able to swap in drives, Joe should be able to swap in drives. If Joe wants to be able to have a different GPU, Joe should have a different, or Jane should be able to have a different GPU. The Pro line is not about someone on a keynote saying, don't worry, you'll get used to it. This is not what you wanted, but believe me, in 3 years' time, you will have a machine that's 3 years older, and you will have forgotten how mad you are that you had to spend $4,000 on something that wasn't quite right for you. So there are different ways to articulate that. I think that the iMac Pro is a nice... I think that it's the best thing they could have done quickly, because obviously for what they want to do for a more conventional desktop is going to take a lot more time to figure out and to build. But so long as it lets me walk out of there $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 lighter, but having a machine that I know will do what I want it to do, as opposed to one that demands that I adjust my workflow and my preferences to the limitations of this device, then they're definitely on the right track.
Yeah, other speculation that I've heard, rack mountability is something that people actually made inserts that allowed the existing Mac Pro, the trash can, to be rack mountable, which is a trick, right? Because it's a
cough, Alex.
They look
cough.
A cylinder. And also I've heard, and I don't know enough about the way that the Xeon processors work, but I've also heard people suggest that stacking processors, multiple Xeons, multiple GPUs, stuff that the iMac can't really do, but that you could do in something with a more expandable case and with room for cooling and things like that. But right, I mean, but in the end,
and also,
yeah.
I mean, like, just to throw this out there, we still really don't know what this deal is with Apple and NVIDIA. I mean, NVIDIA is a big, powerful company. If they say you can't use Metal, or they say you have to use CUDA cores, and Apple doesn't like that, you probably won't find NVIDIA cores in the products Apple makes. But conceivably, now that NVIDIA is making drivers, and you can maybe put them in that new eGPU box that you can get for developers right now, maybe you'd be able to buy whatever Radeon AMD chip board Apple puts inside the Mac Pro, but then take it out and put in whatever the successor to the 1080 is, if you want that. If you want to have just if you want to do the kind of work that requires a lot of CUDA cores, for example,
yeah,
that'd be a huge plus.
So I hope that is what we get, is the Mac Pro will be something that has the, I feel like it has the freedom now that it doesn't have to be all things to all pros because the iMac Pro exists, and instead it can be, yeah, a little weird and different, and take advantage of the fact that it's not attached to a screen and it is not, doesn't need to be super compact. And I think pros will be very happy if that's the way that Apple goes. So we're going to take a break. We've got a little bit more. We're going to talk about some podcast news that happened at WWDC. Woo-hoo. We're going to talk about our picks of the week and a little bit more. But first, another message from the very much alive and well and vacationing Leo Laporte.
We're right back with more Mac Break Weekly, but I had to come back and tell you about Rocket Mortgage. I'm on vacation right now. Last time we went on vacation, we just bought a house. We thought we went to a big bank to get the loan. That was a big mistake. We thought, how long could this take? A week? 2 weeks? We're going on vacation in a month. Surely it'll be done by then. No. We were faxing documents from the boat, from the cruise ship. It was crazy. Next time, Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. The best, I say this with absolute confidence, and if you don't believe me, look at the website, and you'll see all the customer satisfaction awards year after year. The best mortgage lender in the country, Quicken Loans. And I love it that they've created Rocket Mortgage. It's, you know, the mortgage experience wasn't keeping up with the times. It was like something out of the 19th century. Guy with an eye shade and sleeve garters and a calculator. That's crazy. Rocket Mortgage is entirely online. They've got partnerships with all the financial institutions, so you don't have to go through papers or anything. You submit your pay stubs or your bank statements with a touch of a finger on your phone and your tablet and your computer. And because it's computer, you can, you know, select your term and your rate and all that. And because it's computerized, it's not a month or two. It's not a week or two. It's not a day or two. It's minutes. You're minutes away from loan approval. You could do this at the open house. And before you leave, show the realtor, yeah, we're approved. We'd like to make an offer. Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage. I love it. From Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully. Mortgage with confidence at Rocket Mortgage for a brand new home, for a home purchase, or a refi. Go to rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. Break, equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. They got a nice new address now. rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. Give it a try. And now back to the show.
Thanks, Leo. All right, podcast news. Now, let me tell you a little story. 2005 was the year when Apple really embraced podcasting. They rolled it into the iTunes store as this special corner where you could subscribe to podcasts. They added it into iTunes. Podcasting has really grown in the last few years, reached a lot of mainstream appeal with things like Serial. And here's a funny thing. The world's most popular player for podcast stuff is the podcast app on iOS, run by Apple. So Apple's investment back in 2005, before there even was an iPhone, has paid off in the sense that Apple controls a huge part of the podcast market. And since podcasts are driven by what we call an open standard, which is an RSS feed, that Apple has been building extensions into that feed over the years, and then other podcast developers support them. So Apple made some big changes that they announced this week that they're going to put in the podcast app in iOS 11 and presumably into iTunes as well in a new version. A bunch of new extensions to do things that we've learned about podcasts in the last few years, like seasons and more readable episode titles and descriptions instead of packing all your information in one title tag, which I'm guilty of, and I think many podcasters are. Lots of interesting stuff on that end. And then also on the analytics end, they're going to actually gather data from user behavior as they watch podcasts or listen to podcasts, because you can't watch them on the Apple Podcast app, can you? Or maybe you can.
Yes.
Anyway, analytics. So now we only know if you downloaded the podcast. We don't know if you listened to it. Apple's going to tell podcasters if you listened, how long you listened, when you skipped, lots of information, anonymized, aggregated, but way more data than we've ever had before about podcasts. Renee, Richie, you're quoted in my article about this because you were sitting in the room, I think, for this session.
Yes.
What do you think about all this?
I think Leo's finally going to know that whenever I talk, the listenership just drops to zero, and I'm going to get a very stern phone call.
The jig is up.
Come this September, and we'll find out that Casey List is the most popular podcaster on podcast.app, and
turns
the world's going to be upside. Yeah. No, I think it's really, really great, and they sort of broke it apart because there's a new podcast app as well. It's going to really show off sort of the same new design language that Apple debuted in music. It won't have all the machine learning and the recommendations, and I can't see what Jason is doing with podcasts, like what he's listening to yet, but I'm sure that's coming because they have a shared foundation. And then they sort of got into this really interesting stuff where they did realize that back in the day, you know, when Leo started, it was very much episodic, like in reverse chronological. It was like a blog post in audio form, and people would subscribe and they'd want the latest breaking news and the latest breaking episode. And now, thanks to things like Serial, things like The Incomparable, you know, all these things that have sort of a more seasonal approach, people sometimes want to start off with the latest season and the first episode of that season, and they want to listen to it the way that it was actually broadcast. And these tags give you that option, and they give you options to do things like trailers, which up until now were just regular episodes, and things like bonus material, which I know you've been doing, you know, people like Dan Benjamin did After Dark for a long time.
Exactly.
And all of that was just crammed into feeds, and now all of it is going to be a first class citizen, and that's super exciting.
Yeah, the short version is the podcasters really were given like a few boxes to fill in, and we started filling them in with anything we could, like bonus material or season numbers, and we were using what was there. And what Apple has done here is redesign the podcast app to support a richer data set. And if you support the richer data set, like the listener experience becomes a lot more sensible, which is great. And because Apple is so dominant in this, every podcast provider is going to adopt these new tags. And the nice thing about it is they're not proprietary. Every podcast app can adopt them too. So if you've listened to Overcast or Pocket Cast or any of the other third-party apps, I will bet you that they will support these tags too. And so everybody's experience is going to get better with native seasons and these built-in support for teasers. So like a teaser about an upcoming season doesn't show up as an episode. It shows up as a teaser inside the season.
On Apple TV still can't figure out, by the way.
Yeah, it's – well, you know, I have hopes that this will all get worked out and Apple will get its season structure straight across all media. But, you know, I can dare to dream. What do you think about the statistics stuff, Andy? You make some of your living doing talking on the internet. Is that exciting news, or does the privacy issue of aggregating people's listening data trouble you?
Well, I am a lofty angelic being. I live exclusively on the editorial side of the paywall. So, but I do know that I have not a few friends who do podcasting as a business. And so you don't know how you're really making your listeners happy until you find out who your listeners are and what they actually want. So more data is sometimes it's more data, but in the right hands, it's a really blessed thing. And also just as a podcast listener, metadata, my goodness, I almost think that I would much rather have hardware that's 6 years old, but a metadata system that is absolutely current than the top of the line listening device, but you get to know what the name of the podcast is and an episode number, and that's it. Because it's all these problems that we've been talking about that I just want to know. Here is an entire story arc of this entire podcast, or I want to know. I want to be able to quickly go. The way that I'm using Pocket Casts right now is it used to be just here are my favorite podcasts. Please download every episode, and in 5 times I'll listen to them. But I have too many favorite podcasts now, so I need the ability just to simply. Now I don't download anything whenever I need a pod. Whenever I'm going out for a walk or something, or taking a flight, I have to pick and choose that fresh air looks good. that fresh air looks like it's going to be super depressing. That fresh air is a repeat. Oh my God, I got to listen to that fresh air. Ooh, another fresh air about how tens of millions of people are going to die early because of the, okay, I don't want to listen to that one. You know, that's how it goes. And it looks like all these different changes are going to make it easier for me as a podcast listener to have a great time. And because Apple has this ability as the enormous gorilla of the industry to say, we are going to have this standard going forward, and maybe the rest of the industry would kind of like to consider jumping on board it because it would be a good thing.
Susie, what do you think about podcasts? You listen to podcasts, don't you?
I do listen to podcasts. Right now I use Pocket Casts and I really like it, but I'm wondering if a lot of like podcast power listeners are going to suddenly abandon their awesome third-party pod catcher apps so they can jump into Apple's podcast app and be like the Nielsen families of podcasting and be like, I want my listening data and my habits in that anonymized data set because, you know, if I listen to Overcast and these podcast makers don't know, you know, how will it be tailored right to me. So
I'd imagine,
so I don't know if that's bad news for the third party podcast apps.
I'd imagine it'll be a good enough sample that it won't matter, but I do, yeah, I think that's an effect that might happen psychologically. I also have to wonder if people are going to start feeling like, well, I really want to skip this ad, but then they'll know and that'll be bad for this podcast I love.
I got a lot of mean tweets. I got people saying, I'm not going to listen to you, and now they'll know.
Can I listen to the ads at 2x? Does that count?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I wonder if we'll know like average listen speed. So there's a lot of stuff here. I did hear from several people who said they don't like the idea that Apple is going to be collecting and aggregating this data because it feels creepy to them. Now, I will tell you, probably there are going to be third-party options that don't collect data. I can't envision Marco Arment ever collecting that data for Overcast, but Apple does say it's following Apple's rules, right? It's anonymized. You're given an anonymous token. You can reset the token if you want, so they can't even track you as an individual across these sessions. And so Apple's doing all the things that we would expect from Apple in terms of making this not a creepy thing where they're trying to find your behavior and sell that behavior somewhere. It really is just, in aggregate, how many people listened and when did they tune out? And it's all about averages and all of that, which is not surprising.
You go to Amazon and you just finished listening to The Incomparable Godfather. And now they're offering you a three disc super pack of Godfather just to watch. It's not going to happen.
That's no good.
You launch Safari and there's no more Casper ads because they know that you heard them all on the podcast.
But that's the thing. The thing that's so interesting about this is that when you look at things like there are some sponsors who advertise over and over and over again. And people wonder why, because you think that it's diminishing returns. But they're really investing in brand value. And they know, like, for example, WordPress, that you may not need you might not have coincidentally need a website when you hear Leo talking about it, but 6 months from now, your relative could ask you to make them a website and you don't want the headache and you just direct them to WordPress. And that kind of value, even if people skip the ads, they still hear what the ad is before they skip it. So it still breeds that kind of brand awareness. And I think we're not going to see the hit. We're not going to see the hit to the kind of advertisers I personally like best with this model.
By the way, WordPress also, and Casper are sponsors from time to time here. And Renee was not compensated for using them as examples right there.
Disclaimer. I was just trying to think of an advertiser.
Yeah, but, I mean, mention the ones on the show. That's always.
Maybe it'll attract a new, you know, a whole new wave of advertisers that we haven't seen, you know, interested in podcasting now because they don't get data back.
That's what the big players are hoping is exactly that, which is that they're the ones who are TV and radio advertisers and even like billboard advertisers are skeptical about brand advertising on podcasts. They want to see the numbers, and this will give them a better idea because unless you're doing direct response, as Renee said, where you can directly measure it, it's a lot harder to tell who's listening and if it's having an impact. And that is, there's a lot of money in brand advertising. It's just a very different beast than saying, fill out this URL or put in this code and we know that you listen to that podcast.
And it's kind of not fair right now because I might have listened to 300 episodes of The Incomparable and then listened to MacBreak Weekly and used that code because it was the freshest in my mind. And right, you get zero credit for that right now.
I get people on Twitter who are asking if I have a code for a thing that they heard, you know, now that they're in the market for it, right? That happens a lot. And bless those people, but you're right. Most of the time, that doesn't happen. You're just thinking, I'm going to go buy a soda, and Coke's not a sponsor, right? And I'm going to get a Coke instead of a Pepsi because I saw that funny Coke ad. Or you know what? Where brand advertising matters a lot is a product from a brand that is not perceived as being legitimate. And this is why Vizio started doing massive brand advertising about 5-7 years ago. And they hired like LaDainian Tomlinson, who was the best running back in the NFL. And he was their spokesman. And they did all of this branding so that when you were
standing... Amazon, billions of dollars.
Yeah, because when you were standing at Costco and you saw a Vizio TV, instead of saying, Vizio, I've never heard of this before, you're like, oh yeah, that's a real company. They can pay for advertising. And that's brand advertising in a nutshell. So podcast people, the Gimlets of the world, they want that money. They want Ford to come in and do brand advertising. And but they're hoping that this will give them that.
Not a sponsor. Right?
Not a sponsor.
Let's also not ignore like smaller stuff. Like the number of times where I've watched, let's say, a YouTube video, and I don't care if they're I have YouTube Red, so I don't ever see any ads. But I watched a YouTube video, and that got me really interested in the singer. And now, I mean, I can't tell you how many like CDs I've bought of this singer, because I just like her voice so much and her attitude. The ability to have a podcast where you've got an interview with somebody and maybe you've got some clips from their stuff and say, by the way, there are some Amazon links, affiliate links, because if you want to buy, here's a collection of things that you can buy that if you liked what you heard here, to go out and buy. And by the way, it will also benefit us tangentially in the form of a good $30 or $40 at the end of the month of credits we can spend on those big, huge bulk bags of M&Ms that we're not supposed to eat, but we'll think, oh my God, well, this is free, so why not get the free M&Ms? Stuff like that. Again, give people the power to find their own awesome, and sometimes there can be an awesome factor in doing advertising that really, really works.
Yeah. It's true. The fact is, I've heard from people who say, oh, the jig is up, this is going to ruin everything for podcast advertising. And those are people who, I guess, don't believe that people actually listen to podcasts. And it's not true. People do, and they do listen to the ads, and they do like the ads. And there wouldn't be ads on podcasts if they didn't work. So I think this is going to give podcasting a little more legitimacy, because the data is going to be a little stronger and come from a third party who is probably trusted more than the podcaster themselves, in that it is Apple. And that this will probably be a pretty good sample for most shows of the average listener, because Apple has such a huge market share. This is a very large percentage of the podcast audience.
And it'll be the mainstream listener, which is what they're really interested in, because I think a lot of the tech shows skew towards Pocket Cast or Overcast, but this is going to, like you said, for Serial and things, that's the biggest player, and they're going to get all the data they want for that.
That's right. Tech shows, I mean, my shows are usually about 50% Overcast and only about 25% Apple, and then so like 10-15 for Pocket Cast. And Serial, even some of my shows that are more general that I do on the Incomparable, have, once you go to like the Incomparable Radio Theater, that's like 60 or 70% Apple. So very quickly, when you lead the tech sphere, Apple is the dominant player when it comes to podcasts. And that's because of their long investment. And Google hasn't made that same investment on Android, which is why it's behind there. Okay, we should move on and talk about picks before we wrap it up this week. So much to talk about. I like to say that this will be grist for conversations for this whole summer. Little things that get mentioned at WWDC. Look, they're going to be covered in MacBreak Weekly for weeks to come. So there's much more to come, I'm sure. But for now, I'm curious about the picks of the week. Andy Iannotko, fellow co-host and not panelist at all. What's your pick?
Thank you. My elan has been undampened. Thank you very much. Two fashion picks today. One of which you've seen on many wrists if you've been watching the video. This is the limited edition Apple Pride Band for Apple Watch. That's the right way, whatever. And it is, you can buy them online, $50. It's a nylon strap, the same as the usual. You can get them in some stores. I'm getting reports that they are available starting today, or people finding them in stores today, but they are limited edition, so they're not going to sell these forever. So if you want one of these, for what it stands for, but also it's just an awesome band. For summer, I just don't want to take this off my wrist. I want like colors on my Apple Watch. And I'm not embarrassed to say that this is, WWDC announcements got me excited about Apple Watch again, but also seeing this online, actually seeing this, of course, on Renee's Instagram, because he got one at WWDC, and say, I now, just as a watch, I want to wear this on my wrist. So this has been like my daily wristwatch since then. So if you want one of these, definitely do not wait, because at some point they're going to sell out and they're not going to have them back again. On another note, this is the our friend who does Diesel Sweeties, R. Stevens, has a new enamel pin, and it is this gorgeous enamel pin of I need an assistant to do camera work for me. A lovely enamel pin of the Apple command key, $10 or $12. It looks like $1 million. It's a good like formal wear sort of one. I actually bought a 2-pack, because I'm sure that at some point someone I really, really like, oh my God, that's so cool, where can I get one? And because I love my friends, I'll say, you can get one from me. This is my gift to you. And I'll know that I'll still have like the second one back at home. And they'll remember that, no, you gave that one away too. You're going to have to order some more. But hey, for $11 or $12, you can afford to get them.
All right. That's great. That Pride band is beautiful. Everyone was envious when we saw that Apple employees had them. It's great that they made that available during Pride Month, no less. Apple, no stranger to a six-color rainbow, by the way. But this is the Pride flag rainbow, and it is beautiful. Even people I know who are Apple Watch skeptics have pulled out their Apple Watches because they think that is the best-looking band that they've ever seen for the Apple Watch.
It's made me wish I had like the jet black watch, because I've seen now this with the jet black bands, like, oh, now I know what Renee goes on about having every single color and every single model, because now I kind of want to see if I've got $700 for a black edition.
Not that there's anybody who resembles that, Renee. Anyway, Renee, what's your pick?
So I want to echo Andy's sentiments about this band. This is actually a little bit deeper color than the one that Apple gave employees last year. So it is really, really nice. It is not the Apple logo colors. It is actually the rainbow colors. If you want the Apple or six colors version, you have to go for, you know, the Jason Snell memorabilia.
Yeah, Apple's rainbow is different hues, I am told. I'm colorblind, so that's hard for me. And of course, their rainbow starts with green, which the Pride flag rainbow does not.
It's the order Steve Jobs says it was, Jason, and we're not gonna.
Sure, who would we be to argue?
So what I'm going to recommend, again, is based on my rant earlier in the show, and that is, if you get the new iPad Pro, it is a really, really good machine. And if you want to use it, again, not as a laptop replacement, but as a laptop alternative, you might need it once in a while to connect to other things. And that can include a keyboard. It could include, you know, a microphone for podcasting. It could include an Ethernet port if you really need to do some sort of secure or high bandwidth internet, or you just want a more reliable connection. And in order to do that, you need what Apple typically bills as the USB 3 camera adapter. The camera part in that is a lie. Yeah, you can use it to plug in things that have a USB 8 cable, including your iPhone or any camera you want. But it really is a multitasker in the absolute good eats best sense of that word. You just plug it in, and I believe it's still low power. I don't think you can put anything that draws too much power from the USB-A port. But for anything that is a low power peripheral, again, the keyboards, the low power mics, the Ethernet adapters, you just plug that into your iPad Pro. You get USB 3 transfer speeds, which is much faster than the previous USB 2. Whatever transfer speeds, and it feels like you're almost kicking it old school style for a while.
I don't want to actually you there, but that lightning port that you see on that adapter, what you do is you use that port
to give it
power, and then you've got a powered USB situation.
There
and
you
then
go.
You can run pretty much anything you would think you could run off of USB power, which is pretty great.
Just make sure you plug in first. Please, people, play responsibly.
Please, be safe. Yeah, you've got a lot of wires in this scenario, but it can be done. You can plug in an Ethernet adapter. You can plug in a USB microphone. Pretty much anything you can think of, which is pretty awesome.
I'm sure you've done all that, Jason.
I have. I've tried it all.
Yes. And he's still here.
I've survived to tell the tales.
Jason is the Jane Goodall of like mobile iPad audio. It's like he has sat in the wilderness with these weird field devices, communing with them, getting them to earn their trust.
Yeah, it was one grove over from where I heard the HomePod out in the wild in the wilderness. Susie, what's your pick for us this week?
Well, last night I watched a very good basketball game. The Warriors are world champs once again. And I don't have cable, so I watched that on YouTube TV. You could also stream it through the ESPN app on my Apple TV. But even the native Apple TV app was not delivering the performance that myself and my party guests needed. It was stuttering and pausing and just terrible. And I think that's probably because a lot of people stream with the ESPN app. So I jumped over to YouTube TV, which is YouTube's new $35 a month over-the-top streaming service. It has unlimited DVR, which is kind of nice, and it's really good for sports. So when I signed up, I just said, yeah, I like the Giants and the A's and the Warriors, and it just started DVRing me all their games. And it does really good live stuff. So the app is iOS only, which is a bummer, but you can AirPlay it to the Apple TV. It was just updated with AirPlay pretty recently. So I did that, and it played smoothly through the whole game. It never stuttered again. We had no audio problems, and it was great. It looked like we were just watching over cable. So, and then it also has Bravo. So it's kind of all my Real Housewives shows that I love so much. So like Sports and Real Housewives together at last. it's basically my favorite TV thing. I had been using Slack, which has some advantages for Apple fans because it has a native Apple TV app, and you can do the single sign-on feature of Apple TV. So you can sign on with your Slack account, not a cable subscriber. You're just paying for Slack, and it'll show you all the different channel apps that you can also now sign into. So you're not getting cable, but you have access to, if your Slack program, if your Slack bundle includes FXX, you can get that app, which has every Simpsons episode ever. And I'd always wanted to just buy a login for that service, but you can. It's called Slack.
All right. And speaking of YouTube, actually, my pick is an app that's really a plugin. It's called Pipifier. It's available on the Mac and on iOS. And if you
it's so good.
On the Mac, it is. So I love the picture-in-picture feature that's in iOS on the iPad and is also on the Mac with Sierra and later, where you can have a little floating video window that is above the UI and you can't close it accidentally. You kind of have to really try to close it. And I use that to watch, you know, anything I possibly can, especially on the iPad, to Andy's point of having a couple apps open and have some floating video. Here's the thing, though. Only some services support the floating picture-in-picture button. What Pipifier does is add it to other HTML5 video providers, most notably YouTube. Once Pipifier is installed, I can go to a YouTube web page and from the share extension menu, just the share button, choose Pipifier, and boop, out pops a picture-in-picture window from YouTube. And this is how I watched a bunch of keynotes from various tech companies over the last month, including Google I.O., popped it out into a picture-in-picture box. So if you ever get frustrated that you're watching video on a Mac or on an iPad and you want that picture-in-picture button and it's just not there, check out Pipifier. I think it's free with a requested donation, but it's great. It's a very limited use scenario, but it really works, and it has made me nothing more frustrating than having to use one side of my multitasking view to have a web page open showing a video when instead I know it could just be floating in a little box while I do my work. So
it sounds, I have a different app that makes you copy it to the clipboard, then go in, then pull it down from someplace else. You can just tap the share button and say, please share this directly to picture-in-picture.
Yeah, share it to Pipifier, and it literally, you can watch it. It does the animation and everything. It flies out of your Safari window into the picture-in-picture box, just like you press that button that isn't there. So
I don't get why the makers of the YouTube app and any other streaming app says that our app is so awesome. We fear for the sanity of the person who uses a version of our app that is even more awesome because of picture in picture. Why would you not support picture in picture? Is it a legal licensing thing? I wish I knew.
My gut feeling is it has something to do with the ad rolls in between, you know, queuing up the next video or showing the pre-roll ad or showing overlays and things like that that are like extra parts of YouTube that I don't mind missing. Quite
I was recently surprise. Trying to play one of those YouTubes that's like, you know, just 8 hours of white noise or something. And I was trying to play that and then on the iPhone and then close the app and do something else. And it said that was an exclusive feature for YouTube Red subscribers.
That's true.
So it might be a value add thing as well.
Background audio is definitely a YouTube Red feature as well. So great picks for everybody. And I think we did a good show. Good 1 week later. Again, a whole summer to chew over everything that happened at WWDC. But I think we did some fine work today, and it's all down to my wonderful group of guests. Co-host Andy Anatko, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Jason. I you did shock me by not opposing. After a week, it's good to take a pause and say la, as it is known.
That's good.
Season four, Babylon 5
reference acknowledged. Yes, of course.
Okay. I felt as though there's at least a 30% chance you're going to do that. You were such an experienced and professional host. I'm sure that was the right call that for you not to do it because your judgment is impeccable.
It would be embarrassing if we sat here making Babylon 5 references. So I'm glad we didn't.
But we would enjoy it so much, Jason, and that really is all that matters.
Renee Ritchie, great to see you last week in San Jose, and thanks for being on as usual on MacBreak Weekly.
Thank you, Jason. It's always fantastic when I get to see you again, and thank you for having me on your show. Once Leo was gone, there was no requirement to do it.
Yeah,
unlike Andy.
It's totally my show, which is why you guys are going to be here next week and I'm not. And Susie Oakes, my wonderful former compatriot at Macworld. Now we're both off doing our own things. It was so great to have you on. Thank you for coming on. This was last minute, I know. I'm glad you could be here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's always a great time.
All right, and that's it for MacBreak Weekly this time. Thanks to all of you out there for watching and or listening. it'll be back without me next week, but, you know, Mac Break Weekly soldiers on. But for now, I have to say, break time's over. Goodbye, everybody.